All right, 4Jack fam, before we get into tonight's episode, we'd like to send a special thank you out to our premier partners. Without their support, this show would definitely not be possible. Therabody, Cricket Shirts, Peretti Golf, Galvin Green, DraftKings, Manscaped, and to wash that all down, our favorite ready-to-drink on-course beverage, Birdie Juice. If you need any information about these sponsors, please reach out to us at 4JackPodcast@gmail.com. Let's get into it.
Welcome to the 4Jack Podcast.
All right, 4Jack fam, we have a special best of episode for you this week. This highlights some of our previous guests over the past 6 weeks, the best parts of those episodes. This week is a busy week in Canada for us. We have the RBC Canadian Open. We have LIV Golf kicking off in London. Lots of chaos on social media. This one will give you a little break, give you some fun stuff to listen to. Let's get into it.
Let's talk US Open. Let's move along here. We've touched on the high points from the Charles Schwab. Thanks for the little insight there, Johnny. That's great that you have a personal connection with the winner. Fantastic timing on our part.
Yeah, way to go.
So let's move on to Boston. What are we looking forward to? What's exciting? What can we expect? Give us some insights from that side of the rope.
Well, it's going to be a ball buster. And, you know, Tulsa was, I think Southern Hills was tougher. I think the scoring was actually higher than most of us thought. I think that, you know, the guys in the range and the players, I think 8-9 was like a pretty nice number based on what we saw in the practice rounds. And then obviously the wind came and it got tricky, but Brookline is going to play tough in the practice rounds. There's not going to be like any lay down in Brookline. And, you know, the course that they played in the 99 Ryder Cup, it's a little longer now. I think they added a little bit of yardage to it. I think they actually cut down some trees, and it's not as tight, but from what I can gather, they're not going to throw a ton of water on the golf course. The greens are small. Like it's kind of like if you took wing foot and the other golf course, like Olympic Club, and like they had a child. That's kind of Brookline. Like it's tight in spots, and there's weird parts of the golf course, especially on the greens, that you just literally can't hit it. And it's going to be an old school, like smack you in the mouth, US Open. I think it's going to be one of the tougher ones that we've played in a while. I think anything around even par, a couple under, is going to win.
Yeah. I was going to jump in and say, I thought it was going to be a kind of a mishmash of Marion meets Oakmont sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the quirkiness of Marion, and then, you know, sort of, you know, you can hit in spots in Oakmont and get away with it, but then you have to sort of golf your ball in other areas. So I don't know, that was kind of the mishmash that I was thinking about. But I think
Olympic
and like, Wingfoot are pretty good.
I say that because, like, you know, Oakmont always gets a lot of credit for its, you know, how fast the greens are, and you know, but Wingfoot is tough. The greens are tough, but the greens aren't like unputtable like if they are at Oakmont. And Olympic Club puts a demand on placement, and it takes driver out of your hands quite a bit. Brookline will do the same thing. So it won't play as long on the scorecard, but it's going to demand guys hit a lot of utility woods and three woods. And I mean, you're going to see a lot more of that because the drivers, there's a lot of runoffs for the driver, especially as far as these guys are hitting. So it's the first US Open golf course they've played that I can remember from what I know of the golf course, what I've studied, that legit takes distance, you know, for the long hitters. Like, no, you literally can't carry this. You can't hit it over here. Like, you can't hit driver, dude. You hit two iron. Where Wingfoot sort of teased you. It's like, you might be able to sneak driver down here. Like, that's where, you know, what Bryce did. Brookline doesn't have any of that. It's like, you're either hitting two iron or you're roping driver. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch. I mean, on our staff, no disrespect to TaylorMade, but we got, you know, Sam, John, Ron, Xander Schauffele. I mean, guys like Taylor Gooch. I mean, it's a ball strikers. You know, it's not going to be a putting contest. It's going to be a ball striking contest. And in my opinion, we have, if there's 15 ball strikers, the top 15 ball strikers on tour, I think we got four or five of them on our staff. And you know, the top three of top, our top three guys are, you know, right in the top five, if you ask me. That'd be Rom, Zander, and Burns.
What are the green complexes like out there? This is a really old country club, one of the U.S.'s oldest country clubs. I would imagine the green complexes are pretty flat, or are they kind of undulating? They're not going to be Pete Dye-ish where it's all fall-offs, but...
No, they're not very big. That's where I bring in Olympic. Olympic has very small greens. But, you know, I always base everything off of the old Ryder Cup video that I watched. So I actually went back and watched like the highlights of the 99 Ryder Cup, and the greens aren't big. There is some undulation to them. There is some weird ones on the front side. There's a couple of greens on some of the shorter holes that are like, if you don't hit it in the right spot, you're going to make 10. Mm-hmm. But I think what the players will like about it is it's like kind of all out. And I hate to use this analogy. It's kind of all out in front of you. Like, you know, where you don't want to hit it isn't hiding from you. It's right in front of you. Like, it's pretty obvious what you do need to do, what you don't need to do. Where it gets complicated at Brookline, from what I can see, and Southern Hills was kind of like this as well, is wherever the pin is, that section is the green. The rest of the green's out of play. So it's not like if the pin's back right, you can kind of dump it in the front of the green and be okay. If you dump it in front of the green, you got nothing. Brookline is sort of like that. Going to be fun. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to watch this one.
You know, and I think you hit it right. It's a very quadrant based golf course, right? So you've got to know where you can go, where your runouts are, where you're going to put it. I would say the safest bet, Parksy or DJB, would that Odyssey will win the putter count for the 42nd major in a row. Would probably be my safest bet right there. So, you know, a little shout out to Luke and Sean, as they're doing a great job as well. So former guests of the show, I would think.
Well, it's actually Sean's, I have to say this. I love Sean and Luke. I just was texting with them like 10 minutes ago. It's Joe Toulon. You want to know the secret sauce why we win so many counts? Yes. It's Joe Toulon.
Yeah. And both of those guys will say that exactly too. They will both say that as well. Sean's just going to take credit a little bit more than he needs to, but that's why Sean's Sean.
Yeah. He'll take 12% when he probably only takes 12%, but Joe Toulon, not to pivot off of the US Open, but like, I just got to give a shout out to this guy. Like, I watch him every week. He takes everything personally. Like, he wants to win the counts, but you know, he's like personally and emotionally invested in every single putter he puts out there is thought out. It's not like, well, we have this one and this one and this one. Like, he's writing down notes, and he's, you know, he might not see a player for 4 weeks, and in that 4 weeks, he's coming up with ideas and writing shit down, and like, he's just figuring it out, and then he shows up. And I mean, he's like, the kid is just like, he's all in. He's all in on the Toulon Odyssey, you know, putter thing. And it's really fun to watch. Like, he's got a lot of passion for it.
Yeah. I've heard really good things about their putters personally.
Why don't you buy one?
Yeah.
We don't buy. We just get things for him, Johnny. He's got it. It's the right length with the grip. So whatever he wants, he's got it. It doesn't come in the promotional pack from a sponsorship. It's rooted through Southern California and then shipped out into the world.
Amazing. Yeah, it's amazing what lead tape does to a putter.
Oh my God! Please don't tell me lead tape all over that brand. Unreleased putter. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Love it.
I mean, if you want to play with, you know, if you're happy with what you got and you like where your game's at, then keep doing what you're doing. But if you want to get better, then, you know, find me on Instagram and I'll dial you in.
Yeah, I didn't know if anybody watched the end of the NCAAs, but there was a gentleman who had some pretty, pretty short putts to get up on both of them, and a certain insects type spider just did not do well under pressure.
That killed me.
Man, that was tough to watch there.
I tell you what, though, did you watch? So I'm a huge Chris Goddard fan. Huge Chris Goddard fan. Like, he's old school baller. Like, he can play. That Sargent kid, though, I think it was on the 18th tee.
Yeah.
Goddard pounded one 188 ball speed. I'm like, well, like he's amped up for that one. And this Sargent kid from Vanderbilt gets up there and hits it like 25 by him.
He's got 140 in to make three. God. That's insane. He hit it down into the cut. Like, he was in the rough and controlled the wedge from 140.
Yeah.
And he's like,
if I'm humming, I'm 160. If I'm humming 160, 165, like, I am humming. This kid, that means that kid's hitting it 60 yards by me.
And it was funny too.
That bothers me.
It was like a prize fight. Cootie gets up there and he hits it in the bunker, but he still nuts it. And then all of their tracks, you know, it's like they got away from him so fast. It's like, and again, we talk all the time because I've got USC Rolling Hills. People just don't understand how hard these kids hit it and how well they play. But I don't know. Greyhawk was actually rather surprising today to kind of just pivot to another place. That golf course played, the wind blew. That son of a bitch played hard. It was tough to watch some of these teams play. They couldn't get it around the way they wanted to. But the game of golf has got an incredible future with the teams that are in there, you know, and it was fun to watch. But wow, it was really something to see those guys hit those tee balls on 18.
Casey, you're a busy guy. I mean, you're working for really, truly one of the coolest golf fashion forward brands out there right now. It's sort of one of those sneaky, didn't really have a lot of presence, and then bang, it's on the scene and everybody wants this stuff. Everybody needs this stuff. You can't get your hands on this stuff. Maybe talk us through the brand and the cool things about being with G4.
Sure. Yeah, man, you nailed it. We have come a long way in a short amount of time. And we owe a lot of that to a lot of people, but I'll start with the guy who founded this thing, and that's Massimo Giannulli. And I think a lot of people, a lot of listeners will know his name and his past and the brands that he's been associated with. And I think he was the youngest guy on the front of Forbes magazine when Massimo was at its heyday and right before they sold to Target and all that stuff. And we owe it all to him. We are lucky to have a living, breathing designer that just drips cool every day. It's what the guy does, and it doesn't stop. And one of the things I get asked about the most is, you know, always, do you know him? And does he come to work? And yes, I know him very well. Fortunate to have a friendship and a mentorship with him. And then he's there every day. The guy is a grinder. It's in his blood. He's a designer. And I don't know how he sleeps at night. I don't know. Well, I do know he drinks his way to it a lot of times, but he's got a magic touch and he's got a vision and an eye that is unlike anything I have ever been around. And we owe a lot to him. And then secondly, as Derek alluded to earlier, the other guy, his other favorite guy in golf is, it's a guy named Todd Martin at Peter Millar, who I think was on your guys' show already. And Peter Millar came in 3.5 years ago and purchased us. And that flipped the switch for us overnight. The credibility, what they provided in the world of golf, their management team. There's no one like Todd and Scott Mahoney and Todd Ruip on the retail side. Three of the best people I've ever been around, let alone in golf. And just well respected. They're the gold standard of service in golf. And for them to see what the potential was for G4 was a big deal. And it validated us overnight and allowed us to do what we do best. And that's create really, really cool shit. And always be on the cutting edge. We try not to be out of bounds. We don't want to be obnoxious. We don't want to be disrespectful in any way, but we want to disrupt the golf world. We want to be whimsical. We want to be edgy, and we want to do it our way. And Moss isn't going to let us do it in any other way. And it's the real reason I joined and the reason I am still here, because I love it every day. I love our products. I love our people. And I love what we're doing in golf.
It's so cool that you've really cut your teeth with the biggest brands in golf. And that progression and that evolution must be really, really cool to see. But at the same time, these guys have like kicked the doors down and lit the dumpster on fire as far as leading design, leading color, leading, you know, any kind of a branding. I mean, it's just, they walked the line with like craziness, coolness, and it's got everybody's attention. So maybe talk to us about like, you know, the old stuffy world and how things kind of come full circle. And now golf being on this crazy trajectory, it's like, yeah, the timing couldn't have been any better.
No doubt. Lucky, man. It's so fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. I was very fortunate to work for some great large brands in their heydays and saw some unbelievable runs there. I was with Max Fly Golf. It was my first golf job in 1998 with the Revolution Golf Ball.
Great ball.
It was the best. It was
and the HT100. What a golf ball.
That's right. The Gold Box HT and then the Revolution ball. And if you remember, We had Fred Couples, Siri Pack, Scotty McCarron. We had a group of guys playing the ball out of nowhere. And the first couple years that the ball would turn like a slight shade of yellow in the sun. And so I tell everyone, we were ahead of our time with all the yellow balls. It was like you could always pick your ball out in the fairway. But it was a phenomenal run there and met a lot of great people. My first introduction into the golf world, learned a lot about sales. We were purchased by TaylorMade Golf and was there for, you know, the R7 quad, the launch of a movable weight driver, and maybe the best marketing team ever. Sean Toulon, there's a bunch of guys there that just blew the doors off. Really innovative, smart guys. And obviously Mark King was the leader. And he's a pretty polarizing guy, I would think, to most people. But he was a salesman. And he put sales over everything. And I remember being at one of my first sales meetings. And it's the same show every time. You get the hype video and they get you all hyped up, right? You're going to see the new products and they're going to, each marketing guy is going to tell you why it's 5 yards longer and all the good stuff. And then Ken gets up at the end and he makes everybody kind of quiet down and he says, all the sales guys stand up and you don't really know what's coming. And we're all standing and it's probably 65, 70 guys maybe. And he says, I want you guys to look around because these are the people that pay the bills. Without sales, we have nothing. And he would do it every single sales meeting in one of his really cool creative ways to acknowledge the sales group. And as nuts as he was, and he was tough, he was a salesman and he taught me a lot about sales and how to mold a sales force and run a sales force and customer first. And there was a lot of things I look back on that, man, I hated at the time and put myself through some things that I was not super proud of maybe at some point there, but the learning curve was worth it all. And it's like probably a tough coach to play for at some point in your life that you hate. And you look back and go, man, that guy was telling me everything I needed to know. And I just maybe didn't want to hear it. Wasn't ready to hear it. And that was a lot of that TaylorMade experience for me. And then I went to Cobra Puma Golf when Puma purchased Cobra away from Titleist FootJoy. We had a guy, Bob Philly, in there and some other guys, Dan Ladd, Matt Elms, guys that were really good friends from the Adidas TaylorMade crew. And I was one of the first handful of guys in that. And obviously we get Ricky Fowler right off the bat. We do the orange stuff. We do the flat bill hat. Not a big marketing department, not a lot of money to spend. That was a group, the Big Puma group wasn't quite sure where golf fit in. And so we had to do things on a shoestring budget. And so there I learned a lot of creativity and how to do some guerrilla marketing, just some fun stuff and really think outside the box. And we played, use their term, Bob Fillion, we played in the rough there. Like we were certainly not traditional in any sense and down the middle of the fairway. His term was, we play in the rough and also make cool shit that works. And I thought that was pretty simple, those two philosophies. And so I started looking around like, who's doing that best? And I'd known Mossimo more as an outsider and followed what he had done and in the industry, in his world, in the fashion world. And if you're in SoCal, you've worn his stuff, seen his stuff. He's a legend. He's employed a lot of people, given a lot of people a lot of money over the years and let them allowed them to earn a living and helped a lot of people. And when I first saw his G4 stuff, the colored gloves, I thought, wow, that is cool. Like what a really simple way to add a touch of color and excitement to the game. I mean, it's not too much. It's not a hot pink flowered shirt. It's just a touch of color that anybody can add to their game and kind of accessorize with and have some fun. And that's kind of how the whole thing started. I reached out and just said, if you guys are ever serious about making a run in golf, like a legit run and going to get a backing and whatever you're thinking, big picture, long-term, I think I'm the guy that can run it. I want to be a part of it. I love the brand. I've been around golf. I know how it works. I've seen all the corporate stuff. I know you don't operate like that. We can do things our own way. I know that's how you are. And I want to be a part of it. And I remember going up for my interview with him and Nicole Castro Giovanni, who is his president, our president. She's been with him like 16, 17 years from when she was an intern right out of college and just, you know, basically his office assistant. And now she runs our company and she truly does run it. She's an amazing woman and does a lot for us. And going in there and just the minute we started talking, I was like, this is home. This is me. This is the brand I've always wanted to be a part of. This is the product I believe in. This is the kind of vision for golf that I always wanted to have or to help make a change in. It was just lucky, man. Just right place, right time. And super fortunate they gave me an opportunity.
AJ, you played a lot of competitive stuff growing up. Yeah. Did you want to be paired with the best guys to push you, or what was your kind of
thought for sure
on that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think even like in junior days, amateur, I mean, my professional career, a couple times like got in the mix, let's say, or one of the best times was I was non-conditional on the Canadian tour and I was an alternate and I got in like Thursday morning and someone in like the top category, like the champions category. So I played with like two guys that had won that year. And I think it's like, no, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And then even the flip side, like playing a lot of mini tour golf over the years in Florida, you play with a lot of PJ tour players, mainly old guys. And you can kind of think about like, oh wow, like, you know, I'm playing with Lee Jansen, you know, he's two-time US Open champion. And one of my good buddies, Brad Fritch, like three, four years in my career, he's like, Andrew, you're as good as them. Like, don't let their past make you think that, oh my gosh, you shouldn't be golfing with them. You know, so that kind of helped me be like, yeah, you want to play with the guys that are playing the best, because yeah, hopefully it pushes you to see exactly where you're at, kind of thing.
Right. I hope it just doesn't take away from the competitive side of the golf and it doesn't turn into like this exhibition with these guys. Cause I feel like sometimes when the big names are put together, they drag each other down or they build each other up and it gets,
gets
a little bit away from it. Well, I got to say one more thing here before we move on. I did see there was a mention, Derek's going to love this. Ricky is thinking about playing the LIV Tour.
Go.
Fowler.
Go. Do anything you can to make his dough. Go.
Yeah.
If you're top 100 somewhere and you can get it and they're going to take you, go. Like, the LIV for me is for Ricky Fowler. It is for Lee Westwood. It is for Ian Poulter. It's who it's for. I have no malice towards anyone. What I don't want is for the PGA Tour to be essentially the promotional tool for all these young guys that are going to make it quick. And then they go elsewhere. And then it becomes a competitive thing looking at other golf courses. But Ricky is not doing it on the PGA Tour. So it's no different than, you know, if you can't quite be the best player in the NFL and you're going to be a great player in the USFL and the money's the same, go be successful and win again. I have no problem with it. I'm all in on people like that. Who I'm not in on is just the thought process of all of the accoutrement that comes with being part of that tour and the PGA Tour having to go through hoops to try and keep people. What I don't want to do is get into this decision-making. Either you partner up or you don't. But I you can see that a lot of these guys, I mean, Smiley, let's get Smiley Kaufman on there. Let's just go. I mean, if you're not winning, go. But you're not going to see the best players like Rahm and Rory and these guys leave when they're going to control not only television money and PIP money and all the other money. They don't need that. But you know what? I think Poulter and Westwood have done a great, good for Ricky, like good for Sergio. I don't have a problem with it. Just don't be an asshole on the way out. And I'm fine with it.
So my thought today was the LIV Tour is like what mid-amateur golf is to amateur golf for washed up 40-year-olds that could go and still be competitive and play. And it could still have profile. You can still get in the US or the Masters and the US Open by winning the US mid-am. But, you know, at the same time, I think.
Chris, are you wearing a LIV golf shirt right now? Is that what I see?
No, but David, I think you're exactly right. And you know what? Maybe they can then blend with the senior tour, which is just unwatchable. Maybe it can be 40 to 55. I have no problem with that because where we're trending on the Tour Edge Tour is just too much. It's horrible. Lenny Watkins is brutal. It's awful golf with people who are just kind of ATMs. Kirk Triplett, Steve Strickler, guys that have made hundreds of thousands of dollars their whole life. Go get it. I have no problem. But if you can find a way for guys like Ricky and Lee and Ian and Sergio, guys that probably aren't going to win on the regular tour, aren't going to be competitive even with the talent they have, then I'm all for it. And that, go exploit yourself, go do it, go make money, put your family, make it generational wealth. But yeah, like I said, it's just the Rahms and the JTs and the Jordans and the Rorys that I want them to be part of a tour where they establish growing golf as a PGA golf professional and knowing that they're growing the game in the way they were doing it. I have no problem with Monahan being protective of his turf, just like I have no problem with the LIV. I just have a problem with guys like Norman and Phil who are ready to absolutely F anyone over they can to get a payday. I just think that that's wrong. And, you know, again, you see Allen on television and you hear about gambling debts that are two or three times what we heard. This stuff is not all coincidental. So just let it all come out, let it fall as it may. And you know what, like David said, if this is your post not wanting to compete against flat belly college golfers, go get it.
There you go. Paul, I got to say, Team TaylorMade was out there in full force, right? We had a couple drivers out there. You guys were swinging some decent wrenches.
Well, I mean, you guys are good to us. A great sponsor of the show. And
Derek.
Yeah.
Austin was full of TaylorMade. Austin had a great time. He was TaylorMade head to toe. So yeah, they were very well represented. I will tell you, there were more Theraguns than sets of TaylorMades. There were definitely more cricket shirts than sets of TaylorMades. There was definitely a couple more disruptive drinkware, pieceware than TaylorMades. And we don't even have to cease and desist on all of the things that are what we drink out of. So it is what it is.
I like this. I'm assuming Austin's going to be swinging Callaway in the next couple of weeks. So we can put that one to bed. Love that you just laid out all our sponsorship. Did Manscaped make an appearance at all? We missed that.
Paul was absolutely Manscaped. There's no question about that.
That was the gift for Mother's Day for Paul.
Correct. Yeah.
The takeaway gift.
Moving silky. Yeah. Right.
So it was rather uncomfortable as he was getting ready to pour to go back to Nashville with just use completely. I mean, it was as smooth as, you know, a Jaguar's fur. So it was awesome. Wow. And, you know, I'm sure that we keep talking about it as well. I'm sure that it was a really good reunion on Monday.
Men, listen up.
These are my balls. See how they glisten in the light? Your balls can be like these, but you got to use the right tools for the job. This?
No.
Introducing the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0, the only tool with the performance and precision you need.
I guess I have let my bottom half go.
This trimmer features skin-safe technology to help reduce the risk of nicking cuts when it comes to trimming privates.
It's cordless and waterproof, making it very convenient for shower use.
You can even drop it in your pint. You wouldn't want to drink it, though. It's got pubes in it.
Let's try to keep it classic, okay?
The Lawnmower 4.0 also comes with adjustable trimming guard sizes for customizable trim.
It's got an LED light, so you can always see what you're doing. Lights, please!
With a powerful 7,000 RPM motor, it can trim through even the biggest forest.
Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide.
It's over 4 million balls.
If you care about your downstairs, it's time to get the Lawnmower 4.0.
Did you just shave your balls and beehole?
Smooth.
Get your privates ready for action. Order your Lawnmower 4.0 today at manscaped.com.
DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports mirrors season-long fantasy sport, but condenses it into shorter, sweat-inducing formats. Heart-throttling contests range from a day-to-day or a week-to-week, depending on the sport. Competitors draft a player roster, and those athletes earn points based on their in-game performance. Sweat the sweat each and every play. Test your skills and knowledge. Throw down your bragging rights. Friends, family, foes, or other fans nationally, let the victory chase for you a change. Check out DraftKings.com and use 4Jack as your promotional code for a little extra kicker. Let's get back to the show.
Case, I'm going to jump in because I've been quiet long enough and you've done everything that we've asked, but you said something that resonated with me deeply, and you said average, and I'm going to go on a line, and you know that you and my view and your views align a lot. You guys transcend average. That's why you sell. Average is everybody in a golf shop that doesn't give a shit. Peter Millar, G4, there are companies that transcend average because the accoutrement with their line makes their line better. People don't talk about Peter Millar, but bathing suits, it's a huge market in our golf shop. People don't talk about what your hats alone transcended average sales, right? So perfect example. Everybody's got this script now to the point where nobody's selling them anymore because everybody has them. But, you know, we sold over 500 in the first 6 months because they were what everybody wanted. We had personalization to them. We had color to them. But if you look, you guys are the first table every single season when you walk in the golf shop at Rolling Hills. And it's not just, you know, there's going to be two mannequins and a bust, and it's going to be forms, and it's going to be things that are tailored. Obviously, knowing Massimo since my days at the quarry and understanding he understands fit, he understands the tuck-in factor to a shirt, he understands where the collar should spread, how it should lay. Then you layer that with really kind of deep traditional quarter zip pieces that can go with a camouflage pair of shorts. I've got 78 different gallivanters and cap toe shoes that I can match with it. It's to the point where, you know, as I've said, Peter Millar and G4 has changed how I locker our members. So now we have members that have two lockers because of G4 shoes. Yeah. We have members that have full catalogs, you know, in there, and there's 4 to 10 different outfits that are G4 and they're compatible with each other. And I don't think people ever really understand the finer things about Barney's and Nordstrom's and, you know, the higher end Neiman and all the things. People understand how things go together, right? High end fashion always ends up in an outfit based thought process. And if you're a good buyer and if you're a good retailer and you understand your membership, you can outfit them from head to toe in quality lines that never dabble on average. And, you know, Todd and I, he taught me when he first was with Fairway and Green and Rick and talked about the cut of trousers and the way things were at that point. We were in that baggy fit. We were in mercerized cottons, and you talked about, you know, this whole thing, how they went on and they went on. And then suddenly he's with Peter Millar, and there's this whole different revolution of lines that if when Dennis would come in and would bag and drag, it would take hours, right? Like yeah. My favorite day every other, you know, twice a year was to see the entire line because it took 6 hours to, because we had to lay it out and touch it. And how does it work together? So let's go into the G4 thought process. And you know, obviously today you've got a beautiful pink shirt on. It matches the hat. Everything goes in that thought process because you guys truly do care. And one of the things I'll always say about Moss is there's never anything forgotten. Like when you go to a PGA show, there's people that own companies and then there's Moss. It's just a different look. It's very Italian. It's usually very understated in color. It's very classically drenched. But more importantly, everything he sells is a vision from head to toe. And I think you guys have really struck a chord in golf because you guys allow me to do other things as a retailer and an award, you know, obviously winning merchandiser of the year and all these awards. I always go back that I don't think it's us. I think it's what we sell.
That's well,
DJB's pumping the tires right now. I love it.
Listen, Derek, that's awesome. And I know that you know that and appreciate it. And you said it so perfectly. And the cool thing is when guys like you do get it and appreciate it and understand it. And yeah, we make cool stuff, but we need guys like you out there that know how to put it together, be our ambassadors, talk to members and golfers and kind of educate them in this world. And we owe a lot to you and to guys like you. And it's they're not a ton of you, man. That's why you're a nugget and one of the best. And hats off to you and your team there at Rolling Hills and what you do for us. So, I mean, I certainly want to start with that. Moss can be a pain in the ass, man. He detail wise, he does not let anything slip through ever. There is nothing that he does not get his hands on or his eyes on before it goes out the door. And that's from, if you look at our, and I'm talking marketing, social media, our letterhead, our font, I could go on and on. And that's what makes us great. He does not compromise. He's not going to bend the rule for anyone else. It's his vision and it has been from day one and we adhere to it. And I know it's what makes us great. I mean, and I love it as hard as it is sometimes. And I'm the sales guy, right? I'm trying to pump stuff out the door and, you know, man, it looks good enough. Let's go. And not if it's not good enough for him, it's not going. So I respect that. I've learned a ton from him. As I had said earlier, his inspiration doesn't come from golf. He's a big architecture guy. He loves cars. He loves boats. He just has an eye that is uncanny. And you look at like our website and our homepage and the montage that we put up each month or each season, that kind of the inspiration board, that's a look into his life. If you guys ever take the time or study that or any consumers do, you can kind of see where his mind goes, and it's cars and beautiful flowers and a Tuscany villa and a, you know, a beautiful boat, and just the guy touches it all and sees it all, and he just has a way to put it all together that is unbelievable. And there, he's got a great team behind him. I always talk about him, but we have some great assistant designers that have been with him a long time and bring a great perspective. We've got a company full of women, very strong-willed, opinionated women. So like our ladies line, our women's line is always very well thought out because we have 30 other eyes on it that will give him some feedback, and they know what they like. And that's kind of neat too. So we get it from all angles.
Oh, that was me. Oh no. So I have two questions before my ringer went off. But first question, did you ever cross paths with Joe Oldham during your TaylorMade days? That was my first question.
I knew who he was. By name only. Didn't really, I was on the equipment side. And then when he moved on, I went to the soft goods side and sold shoes for a while, but knew of him in name and kind of legend status out there. Yeah.
Fair enough. Shout out, sponsor of the show. Moving on. second question. You know, entering the world of shoes, you know, you have FootJoy, Adidas, Nike.
Yeah.
There's some big players in that space. You know, walk us through, you know, those conversations, because I think, you know, someone that loves traditional golf shoes and classics and all that stuff, like when you guys kind of came in the market, I'm like, this is special. Yeah. At the same time, I'm like, this has got to be a tough market to crack. And, you know, to kind of go head to head, you, in my opinion, single-handedly forced FootJoy to kind of evolve, you know, which I think if you were to walk in that room, I don't think they had any interest in moving forward with what they had. But walk us through kind of, you know, that process and that time period of walking in with some of the wild yet simple shoes that you guys kind of came on the market with.
Yeah, that's a great question. And one of my favorites to answer, because it's a really good story. So when Moss started with that colored glove, we had some pretty big name courses and pros across the country kind of dive in, namely Bob Ford at Oakmont and Seminole. Well, I mean, just he's the Bobby Knight or Coach K of golf pros, right? His legacy and coaching tree and professional tree is unlike any other. And he was on it and loved the glove and the color and what it brought and the tradition and history of all the old guys that used to wear pink and yellow and brown gloves, and thought it was just genius. And we started looking around at our next opportunity, and white space, niche, whatever you want to call it. We internally always said, where's the white space? And it was clearly in the shoe lane. You had FootJoy classics that were beautiful. And if you didn't own four or five pairs, right, then you weren't a real golfer. And we all had them. And we had them in the closet, in the box, in the cloth, and would just look at them. But damn, they were hard to put on and wear 18 holes right out of the box. And I mean, you had to break them in around your house. Some guys would dunk them in water. And we all heard the tricks, right? And then there was Nike, Adidas, the big guys that were slapping cleats on the bottom of a running shoe. And that's what they do best. And they've evolved in a big way. So I'm talking about, you know, 7 years ago or so when this was happening. And that's, of course, that's what they were going to do. That was an easy way, easy path into golf. And so you had this beautiful, traditional, heavy, kind of stiff golf shoe, and you had running shoes with cleats on them. And Moss is like, man, where's the one in the middle? Where's the beautiful one that has the engine of the running shoe? Why can't we make a beautiful FootJoy classic, you know, looking shoe, but with the modern engine of a Nike Air Max, you know, super comfortable, no break-in period, you know, check all the boxes. A guy like him, you think about it, and it's kind of in my mind, it always made sense when I was asking him this question as well. And it was, Casey, I wear certain things off the course, certain brands that I love, very high end and really nice stuff. He drives nice cars, and it's not a material thing with him. It's just an attitude and kind of his vibe, right? And he's like, I get to the golf course and I can't find anything I want to really wear. There's nothing for me that allows me to be myself and stand out. And so that is the ultimate answer to me, that he found a niche to kind of combine the best of best without any compromise again, and adding the details and our insole that it has the little ridges on it that massages your foot and creates airflow. And, you know, again, we don't skimp on the details. It's cushioned all the way around the heel. It's not just the back heel. I mean, there's a lot to it. And he put a lot into the development of it and had some consultants from some big brands kind of create a little bit of a road path. And man, it's been a fun road. The shoes are a big deal to us. It's half the business and probably should be more if we allowed it to be and if we had inventory.
Yeah, how's that whole thing impacting you guys? That we don't like to talk supply chain, but I'm going to ask the question. What's that
I'll been make like it to brief. Navigate? Yeah, I'll make it quick for you. It's a train wreck, man. It's they keep telling me it's like, you know, good problems to have. I am tired of good problems. It is tough, man. When you're clicking and people want the product and the brand is so hot and the product is so good, not to be able to have it for everyone and be able to get it to our key customer sometimes is tough. And it is a good problem. I get it. I understand it. And it has gotten better. We have found a lot of ways to work around it. We have a great back end team, ops department back in North Carolina that, you know, are grinding every day to find us product. So it's getting better.
Paul, let's time travel a little bit. Let's go way, way back past Congaree, past LA with the Chris Lane show and all that chaos. Let's take it all the way back to your introduction to the game of golf and who was instrumental in that and walk us through the early years.
Yeah. So in between second and third grade, my family moved from California to Oregon. And that summer just, you know, it was hard to meet a lot of kids because school wasn't in session. And by our house was a par three course. And I went up there with my mom one day and that was it. I mean, I was absolutely hooked with the game. You know, I think growing up on a par three course, you get the fundamentals down real quick and chipping and putting the ball and getting up and down. And so many many great memories there. And my grandfather too was pretty instrumental. He was an avid golfer himself. And he was very supportive emotionally and financially as well with me getting into golf and sent me to the Ledbetter Academy and the Jim Flick School and some personal lessons with Jim, which all this has made no difference in my game nowadays. But I'm pretty grateful to him and got to play on the high school team in golf and actually got burned out. After my junior year, it's for anyone who's played competitive golf growing up, you can probably relate. There's probably a point where you're just like, you're over this. I took a break and in hindsight, I'm super glad I did because, you know, a few years later, I fell in love with the game again and, you know, and then befriending Derek certainly poured gas on the fire as well.
Scary. We're peeling layers of the onion back here. So let's just stop right there, Jim.
I thought I saw you crying.
Yeah, it was emotional. I was touched. Let's talk about that. So you're a young guy, you're pursuing the game, you're falling in love. You're really thinking about maybe, hey, I want to pursue this from a competitive stand. You have the opportunity to get in front of some of the world's best instructors. Talk us through that portion of your life.
It was incredible. I mean, my grandfather had gotten to know Jim Flick a little bit and was kind enough to take me in at one of his schools a couple of times and work with me individually. And it is so funny the things that were taught back then that are taught differently now. I remember Jim trying to cut my left wrist a little bit on the backswing at the top, which that's unheard of nowadays almost. And you know, working with Ledbetter was incredible as well. It's, you know, you do start to see as a junior golfer whether or not you're going to have the teeth to make it out there. And I absolutely loved the game. I reached a point where I was like, I don't think I quite have it to take it to that next level. And again, I think the getting burned out was a little bit of a blessing because instead of trying to pursue it in college, I got to just go be normal and not feel like I had to go practice every single day and, you know, hours out there. And it's very easy to forget why you play this game and you forget it's a game when suddenly a 3-footer makes the difference between whether you're on varsity or JV that week and playing at the good course. And, you know, it can wear you down, but I'm so glad I stepped away from it because I just fell in love with it all over again.
I like that. That's awesome. It's it's a funny sort of game. You can kind of travel away from it, put it on the shelf for a while, not think about it, come back to it, and reignite that passion for it. So you said you met Derek, but that's later in life. So let's stop and let's talk about your passion for music and where this kind of developed, because you're kind of one of those guys that's pretty instrumental. You move the needle in the league of legends, so to speak, in the music industry now. You've had some great experiences.
That's trademarked by Riot Games, so we have to edit that out. But
there you go. But you know what I mean? Like you found your feet and you've done very, very well. You've been successful. You've opened some great doors and had some great relationships. So talk to us about your passion for music and when that sort of started to develop.
Yeah, it started young, like most people. And it was really in college when I went to visit a friend in New York, and her roommate was interning at VH1. And I was like, oh, you can like do this for a living, like work in the music business. That's so cool. And the following summer, I ended up getting an internship with VH1. And that led to a job after college with VH1 in New York City for a couple of years, and then transferred out to LA and worked for MTV for a couple of years doing talent booking for some of their larger shows like VMAs and Movie Awards.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's not speed past this. Like, talk to us about the bare bones of this. Is there a little bit of chaos going on? You're meeting some artists.
It was one of the most stressful couple of years of my life. I mean, my boss was a rock star talent booker, and live television is, I mean, what you guys see when you watch the Grammys or the VMAs or ACM, any of that stuff, you have no idea the absolute pandemonium that goes on, not just that night, but the weeks leading up to the show, and trying to come up with who's performing and what song, and people drop out or get sick, or you know, a host drops out. I was in New York City the night Kanye did the moment with Taylor Swift, and trying to help manage the fallout from all that. I mean, as crazy as working with, you know, big pop artists, hip hop artists and all that was, I'm so glad I did it, because now working in mostly country music, I have such an appreciation for just how much more normal they are. I mean, Hardy is a perfect example, who we were talking about earlier. Like, it's, you know, there was no playing golf with Kanye West in LA. But in Nashville, it's, you know, Derek, you said it really well the other day about golf being the great equalizer. But yeah, those were a couple wild years with with MTV. And then I really wanted to become a music supervisor, which if anyone doesn't know, that is the person responsible for choosing and clearing the music that gets featured in TV shows, films, ads, video games. And it's a very, very hard thing to get into, but I was pretty lucky that VH1 had an opportunity. So I actually went back to VH1 and was supervising a bunch of shows and some films for them, which was great. I loved it. I mean, it was to be able to so heavily influence the emotion in a scene through music. It's almost like you're DJing Coachella. I mean, I wouldn't know from experience, but to be able to get people to feel the emotion you want to feel and to break new artists is such a fun thing to do. And then my wife and I, we had been in LA for a while. We decided we wanted to change things up. We came out to Nashville and started working for CMT, doing the same thing, music supervising for them. And that's when I really got into the whole country music world. Had some great years with them, some fantastic people there. And then a spot opened up with Spotify. They were trying to grow their Nashville office here. And that was wild. I mean, it was very different going from an entertainment company to a tech company. A lot of people think, you know, Spotify is just a music company, but the bare bones of that's a tech company. And the way, I laugh when I watch like movies or TV shows about how the inner workings of tech companies work, because it's so true. I mean, they're making fun. It's kind of like Portlandia. They're making fun of these people, but it's actually really true. If you've lived in Portland, it's actually very accurate.
Were you always a country music guy, or was this like an acquired taste later in life? Because working with hip hop and pop artists, this is definitely a different genre altogether.
Yeah. I mean, I loved all kinds of music. I mean, hence why I'm wearing a Blind Melon shirt right now, but I did listen to country, but I wouldn't say I was a huge country fan until I moved to Nashville and I got steeped into the culture and the songwriter. This is such a songwriter town. I mean, I know Derek really loves all the songwriting things, and he really enjoyed talking to Hardy about all of it. And there's such a, there needs to be so much more of an appreciation for what these guys and girls do day in and day out, going in, and a lot of them are just kind of spinning their wheels for years, writing great songs that will never get heard, unfortunately. And then, you know, a bunch are able to catch lightning in a bottle and get that break, but it's fast. I mean, where I work, I'm lucky to, we have songwriters there, and I get to watch them in action every day. And I just love walking by there and seeing them in the middle of creating something that you just never know. I mean, it may never see the light of day. It may end up as a B-side for one of our artists. It could end up as a massive single for someone who's not one of our artists. But it's so fun to be able to witness it firsthand. I've been blessed to have a lot of really cool, fun jobs, but I mean, I really couldn't be happier with Big Loud, the artists, the songwriters, the staff. It's just such a magical place to work.
Well, I'm going to shout out, I need to know who's going to win the Canadian Open, because we're kind of skipping over a week, and I just want to know who's going to win the Canadian Open.
Well, we'll find out who shows up first, because, you know, some of these guys aren't back. So whether or not Canada lets them in can I say something?
Yes.
Okay.
Please.
St. George's is one of the best golf clubs in North America. Just say that first.
Yeah, St. George's is great. Like Toronto, Canada golf is superb. Okay, so there's two things I got to say. One, I don't understand why I have to test to get in the United States. And the moment you get on an American Airlines flight, the pilot goes, okay, you're in America now. You can take your mask off. That's the pilot says in Toronto, okay? But he still has to test to go into the United States. And then coming back into Canada, I don't have to test, but I have to wear a mask on the plane. The whole thing just sounds crazy to me. It's like 2 + 2 = cat. I don't understand it. I don't agree with it. Like, let's just move on.
This has been my last 6 weeks on the podcast.
So second thing I need to say, and this is to all the Canadian officials that run the Canadian Open. The amount of good golf courses that Canada has and the passion that these people have for the game of golf, besides hockey, it's golf. From what I've experienced, they are gung-ho golf people in Canada. Why not make your championship a true national championship? No RBC sponsors, no corporate whatever. It's the Canadian Open. We're going to have it at the Ball Buster golf courses every year. You show up here, this is a national open. They will get a draw. Find a good week for it to be, and it doesn't have to be a major, but it's got to be a tournament that every elite player has to win to complete a career. It's like the Players Championship. Yeah, I won these majors, but I didn't win the Players. Canadian Open has the ability, if the country gets behind that golf tournament, somehow the national organization gets behind it with some dough, they can make that into an elite golf tournament once again. And I think the people of Canada would, I think they're begging for it. Because right now the RBC is like, oh, okay, like, we're going to go watch it because it's here. But if all of a sudden Rahm and Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy, these guys are consistently showing up, trying, working their asses off to win that golf tournament, and it's a ball buster golf course, Canadian golf will be exactly where it needs to be, which is just a couple of ticks below United States golf. Really? People will be like we're right here.
Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods. Bunker.
It needs to get away from Glen Abbey. That needs to be a great real estate development.
It needs to get out of Toronto, well, man.
No.
It's going
it needs to stay in the GTA, but there's golf clubs like London Hunt.
See, right there is the problem. Right?
No, 100%.
That is why it dies right there.
So where does it go in your opinion? Royal Montreal confuses. Like,
Yeah, no. But they kicked the crap out of those guys. Like Royal Lee Jansen won at Royal Montreal like -3.
If you can play something at Chambers Bay, you can play something anywhere. Okay. And so just understand there are other things, but the myopic nature as an American on a Canadian podcast is what you just said is why it doesn't work. You have to take it to Vancouver. You have to go west. You have to go to east. Find a way to make something happen at Cabot. Figure it out. Build a golf course for them. Keep doing it. If I'm the Live, I go right to Canada and I go right to China and I make those two my number two events open and I put a lot of money in a lot of places and I move forward. But as long as it stays central to Toronto or one very specific part of that, it needs to be different.
But it needs to be at one golf course. And I think where players have complained is Glen Abbey is great as
Glen Abbey's just trash.
Trash. So the practice facility is odd. The golf course is weird. Like it's like three or four different golf clubs mashed up into one. The reality is it needs to stay at one golf course. And no doubt St. George's is one of the best golf clubs in the whole world. But there's no driving range. The infrastructure doesn't work.
Why would they want it every year? There's no win in that. That's a short-sighted thought process.
But the whole point to a national championship is to show off that country's golf culture. 100%. That's the whole point. So you're telling me, I don't know, just the world's telling me, Canada's got a lot of dough. Canada as a country has a shitload of money, right? There's a lot of golf people with a lot of money in Canada. You're telling me that they can't rally the troops and go, guys, in the next 10 years, by 2032, the Canadian Open will be the pillar. Right under, a tick under U.S. Open of North American golf. Like, you have to win this golf tournament. We're playing in elite golf courses. We're going to build places. We're going to restructure some of these old classic golf courses. And we're going to have a rotation of the 10 best golf courses in Canada. And everybody's going to flock to come play in this thing. And right now, when people look at Canadian golf, like, right now, the biggest thing going in Canada golf right now, in my opinion, is TXG. Like, that's the biggest thing going in Canada, right? that's literally the needle of like, serious golf is their YouTube channel, in my opinion. So
it's not too far off, man. Honestly, that's pretty sad.
I watch it all. The Ian Frazier is my best friend in Toronto. They are the needle in Canadian golf right now. And
we need to get Ian on this podcast, actually.
Yeah,
I could set. I'm playing golf with him on Thursday. I'll tell him.
Perfect.
Can't get KBS shafts right now though, but. Anyways, now I don't disagree that I have a ton of opinions. I think where the players have always complained is the fact that there is not the same golf course that kind of goes, you know, they have to prep for a new golf course and they move it around to so many different golf courses. I think going east or west, I'm not suggesting, for all I care, it could be in Winnipeg at St. Charles. It could be, there's a bunch of good golf courses in Calgary that work. I'm not saying it needs to be in Toronto. I'm actually saying it should be at somewhere like London Hunt in London, or there's a ton of great golf courses. Cherry Hills down in Niagara Falls, Fort Erie, Essex down in London area, Windsor area. Like, there's enough good golf courses that they could find two or three that the players could go and play and go, wow, what a golf course. But like the whole infrastructure with St. George's right now, going to Islington, driving up the road, you know, it's great that it's going at St. George's, great golf course, but, you know, the infrastructure, everything that has to happen to make this all work just doesn't work. So,
But people will make it work. The reason why Pebble Beach and Wingfoot and Oakmont are iconic is because they play major championships there. So trust me, if they spread it around they pick the 10 golf courses, they're going to do it over time. I mean, we're talking about like my kids watching golf when they're 30, 35. They'll want to know like Canadian golf, like, you know, what's that one that the golf course is right above London, Ontario, that's really private?
Redtail.
For example, just as an arbitrary example, Redtail is an iconic golf course, North American golf course, because they played a national championship there. Remember this, remember that, remember this, that all happened there. You can't create memories if you don't do jack shit. So it's going to take a while, but somebody now has to say, we're not doing this anymore. We need the Canadian Open to look way different. And it's not going to happen overnight, but you got to start moving some rocks around. Otherwise, it's just going to be like, oh, the RBC Canadian Open, like the thought of the RBC competing with the LIV golf tournament, there's like no way. Like, there's no way you're, like, people are missing the Canadian Open. Like that shouldn't be a thing. it's too important of a golf culture and golf country, and the people in Canada, from what I've seen, they love it. Like they die for this stuff. So give it to them. Like, don't give them RBC at Glen Abbey. Like, come on, let's go.
You're right. It is. Anyway, it's very, no, that's a good rant. I like that.
Well, no, but Royal Montreal makes sense like all day long. But unfortunately the members go, well, we got a President's Cup. We're getting another President's Cup. So why would they give up their golf course every year? Right. Because they're getting that prestige. Like, you know, no doubt it'd be amazing that the players would all flock to Cabot. You know, if you did 200 players, two golf courses, something like that at Cabot, that works, you know, but again, travel destination, it's a little tough to get to, but anyways.
Well, so is Kiowa. Kiowa's hard to get to too. Like Kiowa PGA Championship at Kiowa, like that's no cupcake to get into either. It's a pain in the ass to get to Kiowa Island, but they figured it out a way to get there. I mean, they flocked in 75,000 people on that final day. Like people will figure it out. If it's good, people will go. They'll go through the depths of hell to get.
If we can hold your Canadian Open at Congaree, we can do anything.
Well, Miko Garrick thanks us for doing that too, right? Totally.
So for all the media that's Garrick listening, Miko. I will surrender my media passes for next week. I apologize.
Well, I'll be there and people are like, why are you here? I thought we were idiots. I'm like, well, no, I still have a job to do, so don't kick me out.
Knock the hustle. Well, boys and girls, we're at that magic hour and some change. So, Johnny, as always, it's a super pleasure to have you on. Thanks for making time for us. Love your insights. Love the candor. Love the rants. Always entertaining. Can't wait to have you back on the show.
My pleasure.
That's fantastic, man.
My pleasure.
Well, enjoy your travels. Have fun at the Canadian Open, and we look forward to verifying your picks. Going to throw some money down, obviously, with our DraftKings sponsors, and see if we can come out on top.
God bless, boys. You guys stay out of trouble, and I'll see you on the road somewhere.
All right, man. Take care. Right. Thanks so much for your time. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys. You too. Oh, man. See you.